Good evening. I welcome fellow members, honourable aldermen, ladies and gentlemen, to the meeting of this council. Please ensure that your mobile phones are turned off. Do all councillors have a copy of the agenda? I will now ask the Chief Executive to report on emergency evacuation procedures, etc.
Thank you, Chairman. There are no planned emergencies this evening, so if the alarm does go, it's for real. And you are asked to vacate the building by the fire exits, which are located at the wedding door or at the to my right. Also, I think everybody in the room this evening does know where the water is in the corridor and where the loos are, so I think we can rest assured that people know where to comfort themselves if required. Thank you, Chairman.
Are there any apologies for absence?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Burr and Councillor Sanderson.
Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to apologise for an early departure. I'm without a driving licence at the moment and I'm being picked up at 10 o'clock.
Councillor Andrew.
I give the apologies on behalf of Councillor Jowett, Chairman.
Thank you. The third item is public question time. There are no public questions this week. Item four on the agenda is to approve as a correct record of the minutes the ordinary meeting of council held on the 7th of July 2016. I move that these minutes... Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. I note on page 7... I asked the question, could the Leader of Council please inform how much was in the 2016-17 and 2015-16 budgets? And the Leader replied, I will get you a written answer to that. And in the written answer, I have an explanation of where the money came from and why we were needing to spend it, but no actual sum of money that we might have seen in the budget or in the accounts.
Can I just say, Chairman, that those are there for information. They don't form part of the minutes. So if we could vote on the minutes.
Yes, Councillor Thornton.
Are we not to point out any inaccuracies of the minutes, or do we just say yay or nay to the entire bundle?
The response was for information, not the minutes.
The written responses do not form part of the minutes. They are there for information. They have been sent out to all members, but they are not part of the minutes. The minutes show an accurate recording of what happened in the meeting, which was that I said I would get you a written response. The response is not part of the minutes.
Councillor Thornton, just to add to this, presumably you read this earlier. You could have brought this up earlier so we could have dealt with it more promptly or had it your question answered before. It would make these meetings go so much more quickly.
I suppose we could sort of have an email conversation about almost anything before the meeting and do away with the meeting altogether.
Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. I am not, as usual, going to argue with your ruling. It just seems incredible that we can have any tosh in any answer given to us whatsoever, and there is absolutely no point when it's going to be debated, minuted, agreed, or anything else. But we can work with that. I'm going to refer, I think, to this section a bit like sort of Gardner's Question Time, because we kick off with... you may recall in the last meeting my request to reorder the agenda. and you kindly considered that, and you decided to leave the agenda as it was. Neither my request nor your courteous reply appear to have been minuted. Could we have them added to the minutes, please?
Yeah, I'm happy for that to be recorded.
My second point is, if you look in the minutes, it follows on from my request to move the exempt item to the end. You may recall I did that so that the public weren't asked to leave, wait until the end of that item that was exempt, and then return. And I didn't argue, I went with your ruling, but the result was that we had the exempt item, the public were asked to leave, and that was it. They're still out there, Chair, because we never came out of exempt, we're still in exempt, and the decision to close the meeting was made in exempt. Can we have that minuted, or at least explained, because the tape of the meeting does not agree with what happens in the minutes. By definition, there was no tape for that item on the agenda.
Okay, we'll consider that.
My next point is that while in that exempt, you proposed that we continued the meeting after the 3.5 hour point, because you set out in your initial response to me your intention to complete that agenda that night. So you proposed that we continued. In exempt, Chair, you then voted to not continue. Was that a mistake, or is it minuted wrongly, or why was this proposing one way and voting another in exempt? Or is there something in that that certainly needs some further explanation, Chair?
Well, there's a lot to this.
Yes, there is.
I requested that if you wanted to move things in the agenda, that you approach me earlier. So
yes, I accepted that.
And it was my intention, hopefully, to get through the meeting. But when you get to the late hours, it's possible to change one's mind based on the fact that people are tired and have to drive home, etc. So it was voted on, and I accepted it at that time. I can change my opinion. I'm allowed to.
Yes, Chair, I don't wish to labour that, but you did actually propose that we continued the meeting and then voted against it. So your view at Damascus was instantly on the point. You didn't say you were moving it so as to take a vote. You could have proposed that we didn't continue the meeting.
Okay.
Further points, Chair. There are other ones that are very relevant to this. We have a recorded vote.
Councillor Clark, have you an amendment to make?
Chair, I can move an amendment quite happily on that.
Okay.
On the item for the appeals panel. We asked for a recorded vote.
Which item?
The item for the appeals panel. What number?
Page 16.
We asked for a recorded vote, Chair. It's even minuted that we asked for a recorded vote, but the recorded vote is not there. The recorded vote is not there, Chair. Even though we did it three times, and because we're only working on memory for the third time, and when we can't remember which was the third time, so we're not raising that one.
Okay.
But this one we did. It even says in the minutes there was a recorded vote.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. We'll look into that.
No, Chair. I wish to move an amendment. You asked me to move an amendment. I'm going to move an amendment. I'm going to move an amendment that vote is for Cowling, Frank, Ives, Jan O'Dean, Wainwright, against Arnold S, Arnold V, Cleary, Duncan, Gardner, Hope, Oxley, Windrus, Maud, Andrews, J, Clark, Potter, Thornton, Keel, Andrews, P, and Burr, and abstain, Farnell. That is my amendment. You asked for an amendment?
Can we have some clarity about which minute you're speaking about?
Meeting minute 11. Ten, sorry. You're going to whisper in my ear to tell me accurately.
Councillor Shields.
You have an amendment, Chair.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hear what Councillor Shields says while you're writing that out.
It is written out, Chair.
Councillor Shields, please.
Thank you, Chairman. It's a separate question. I was not able to be at the meeting, regrettably, last time. So I just wanted to know whether it's correct either to abstain or not to vote. And it could do either. I don't really mind. I just wanted to make sure that whatever was going to be done was the right thing. Thank you. Perhaps Mr. Winship can give me an answer.
Which question? Yeah. That's another one. Can you write that out?
Which either you would prefer to do. It's your choice.
Oh, sorry. Delete the whole of that.
Councillor Clark?
Yes, Chair? Yes, Chair?
I disagree with what it does.
Yes, Chair?
I'm ready for your amendment. Okay, Councillor Clark, I can accept that amendment. All right.
Chair, I think you find that if an amendment has been moved and so on, I'm not going to insist on it, but I think move and second are both entitled. If we're going strictly to the rules tonight and we've raised a serious question, no, it's no good getting upset. It's fine when you like it that way round. We're entitled to move, speak for 3 minutes, second, speak for 3 minutes, etc. I've no intention of doing that, but you can't just accept an amendment like that. It's got to be taken as a vote by council, surely.
Just trying to move things along, Councillor Clark.
Exactly what I was trying to do, Chair, before you jumped on me earlier.
I don't jump on people, Councillor Clark. I'm just trying... You've had 40-odd years of experience at this. I've had one short meeting before this. You should be able to tolerate the fact that a chairman struggles to come up with the perfect response that you want. So I will carry on. Councillor Ives.
Chairman, I hope that Councillor Clark does not intend to carry on like this for the remainder of the meeting. It creates such a bad atmosphere. Councillor Clark raised a point about the minutes. Yes, I think he's got a valid point, but the way that he raises it is so aggressive. Now, under the council procedure, it's perfectly acceptable for an amendment to be moved and accepted with the consent of the meeting. The consent of the meeting can be obtained by no objection, i.e. it doesn't have to go to a vote. They do it in the House of Commons all the time. That's when you hear the yea or nay. We do not have to vote if we do not need to. And quite frankly, on something so minor, we seem to spread it out for so long. please, Council Clerk, do not continue the meeting like this. Otherwise, we're not actually going to have a very good debate. We're not going to address the issues that really matter, and we're just going to be navel-gazing. Thank you.
I have a further amendment, Chair, and I did, if Councillor Ives is prepared to listen, I actually said it could be agreed by Council. It was you that decided to agree off your own bat. This further amendment is delete, on the same item, the whole of the resolved, below resolved, page 16, top of, haven't moved anywhere. And it is important that this is accurate because this is the record for the rest of time. Delete, we don't need to. Councillor Ives pointed that one out to you, through you, the Chair. The resolved at the top of the item is taking double negative. The item, the motion at the bottom of page 15, was absolutely right. The wording of that was spot on, as it was. But it doesn't then give you a policy, it gives you no change to the policy. So if you care to read the item on the top of page 16, it says that the members' appeal panel be replaced by an officer of appeals, not replaced by an appeals panel, except where it cannot be considered by the head of the paid service. Now that's somewhere between tosh and rubbish. It works perfectly well when you haven't got the negative in it beforehand. In other words, if it's an officer's panel, except where the chief executive can't, you can't have a member's panel except where the chief executive can't. And on that basis, the whole of that should be deleted. In other words, the change to the policy was defeated, and we would be left with the policy as it was. Now, I don't mind, Chair, if Councillor Ives wants to hurry this on, and you do, but if we have mistakes of this size in the agenda, in the minutes, they have to be corrected. Or we carry on irrelevant as to whether answers make sense, the minutes make sense, the agenda makes sense, we leave the public outside, etc. Now, you may think that I'm not doing this the way you would like. I noted here, and I'm very glad I didn't turn up for the briefing at 4 o'clock, because if I'd got here, there was a note in the pigeonhole to tell me it was at 5 o'clock. So on that, I've got an iPad through you, Chair, and not paid for by the taxpayers of Rydale through you, Chair. Right, so on that basis, Chair, I'd like to propose that we delete that part under the resolve, which has now given the officers chance to read it and I hope agree with it.
Okay. Councillor Clark, I'm perfectly prepared for you to have 3 minutes on this, or can you allow me to accept this without necessarily going into debate?
I think that would be an admirable course of action, Chair, unless anybody wishes to speak against it, and if they do, then I'd like to reserve the right to reply, but hopefully we have nothing at all, because I can't make any sense however many times I've read that.
Thank you. Anybody want to say anything?
Okay, that's agreed. No. Councillor Ives.
I'm going to be very careful with my words, Mr. Chairman, because I'm not going to speak against this motion, therefore Councillor Clark won't have to come back and with a reply. What I am going to point out is that Councillor Clark said that this is a very important issue and it's important that we get it right, as this is a record for eternity. So I just don't understand why he has not raised this point before. We've had 2 months since this council meeting when the draft minutes have been published. There was a meeting this evening of all group leaders and committee chairmen, which Council Clerk was invited to. He chose to ignore that. And now he raises it this evening, and already we spent 25 minutes on this. And then Councillor Clerk earlier had the audacity to point out that we didn't have time to continue with a motion at the last meeting of council because we ran out of time. I wonder why.
A moment, Councillor Clark. I think we're getting to a situation here where we're starting to say things that we don't want to go on with. We need to keep calm, keep reasonable. I must admit I'm with the opinion that when minutes have been seen for such a long time, it would be handy to have been had these dealt with earlier. It seems to make a lot more sense for a council. However, in this particular case, Councillor Clark, as I discussed, we're happy to accept that if it's okay for you for us to carry on. Councillor Andrews wants to say something.
Can we please, Chairman, proceed without there being an endless spat between two councillors in this room? The remarks that have just been made were totally unnecessary.
Okay.
Not your remarks, Chairman.
Yeah, just let's keep this going smoothly and simply. Councillor Clark, can we move on?
Yes, Chair, I would like to come back and wonder who these two councillors may be. I suspect there isn't the animosity between them that you suggest there may be, because if I remember last time, to get over the 3.5 hour point, a certain councillor filibustering for some considerable length of time, but my memory means that I can't remember who it was that was doing that, and is now accusing me of wasting time at that meeting. I don't believe, Chair, I won't take the full 3 minutes by a mile, I don't believe that trying to get the minutes right is that. But I can't see the point in having a meeting that I turn up here for at 4 o'clock, that then kicks off at 5, that hasn't spotted any of these glaring errors that I've been pointing out so far. But maybe I wait for the rest of the people you met for this august meeting at 5 o'clock to come up with those other suggestions. Thank you, Chair. And I have at least...
Anybody, any contributions to that particular amendment? Councillor Clark, is that okay? You can carry on.
Thank you, Chair. I think we're in luck. I think there's only one more. And that is, in the minutes it says in various places that the amount of money to join iEasy was £1 or £5. I'm not sure that both those figures in there, because one of them, I think, the £1 is in the part that isn't part of the minutes, which is fascinating. We have half the answer in the minutes and the other half you ruled as not in the minutes. But on the basis that if you ask here accounts for a receipt to go with it, there is no receipt in the council's accounting systems or invoice for £1 or for £5. But I have here a receipt or an invoice for membership of iEasy when I'm told £1 in the minutes. No, £5 in the minutes and £1 in the part that isn't the minutes. And the reality is, Chair, I have an invoice here, a copy of an invoice for £5,000. Plus that, of course, which brings it to £6,000. These may be trivial differences to you and others. That's fine. I think we should be getting it right. My final amendment...
Councillor Clark, can I please let me just say something?
Yes,
there.
Yes, sure.
I don't really understand why you would say that we consider it trivial. It's not trivial. It's if you have a genuine question there, then so be it.
Fine, Chair, but I don't know quite how you work it when part of it is in the minutes, the £5, and the £1 is not in the minutes... and the actual figure is 5,000. I have no idea, Chair, how that should be sorted, but I am saying the accuracy of this council needs to be somehow improved upon. And I was going to drop it at that. You know, we can take it further. I'll take it further later on this evening, if you like, but in the minutes now. The only alteration that I had for the minutes that needs changing is page 10. And I haven't written this one out, but I'm sure it'll only take a second to do, or you can take... It doesn't actually probably need writing out. It's page 10, the third paragraph down. We're going into a partnership costing... And it says hundreds and thousands. Now, I think that's probably the Great Rydale Council bake-off rather than what I actually said was hundreds and thousands.
That's
hundreds of thousands. And this says hundreds and thousands. And I said hundreds. And as the figure is somewhere in the region of 150 to 200,000, my hundreds of thousands is an accurate figure. Hundreds and thousands doesn't mean anything. So I'd like to change that and to an of. If Councillor Ives isn't too upset by that.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. We'll check the
We'll change it.
Come in may not be accurate.
Okay, has anybody got any more comments on the accuracy of the minutes, or else we'll move them?
Okay,
I'll move it. Councillor Cowling, second it. A vote on the minutes.
Can we have...
And I'm wanting in a...
That's 17 votes for and 9 abstentions.
Okay, the motion is carried. Item 5. There are no items of urgent business. Item 6, declarations of interest. Do any members have any interest to declare? Councillor Goodrick?
Thank you, Chairman. I think it's item 13. It's an item on CAB, and I am the council representative on that board.
Councillor Goodrick, it's item 15.
Sorry, beg your pardon, Chair. Personal, non-prejudicial. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
Councillor Clark.
I am the North Yorkshire representative on for the same item, whichever number it is, for the same subject, but it's non-prejudicial, personal.
Personal, thank you. Councillor Farnell.
Thank you. A personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary interest in item 11 as a member of Slingsby South Holme and Frighton Parish Council.
Thank you. Announcements. I'd like to start that by saying that we will move item 13 ahead of 9 tonight. And I also would like to announce that I have great pleasure in saying that I've been honoured to represent the council in a number of events around the area as my role as chairman. It's been extremely interesting to go around and meet all the various people who represent other bodies. I won't list them all, but the Yorkshire Day at Halifax was really quite brilliantly run, Councillor Arnold was with me there representing County Council, and the other one that really sticks in my mind is the truly excellent Rydale show. I was really impressed at the work that the hard work that goes on to put these shows together, and Councillor Cousins knows this more than most. It was delightful to see the people of Rydale out that day, and I feel I'm really happy I attended. So on that, I can move. Leader, would you like to say something? Yeah.
I did say to you that I didn't have any announcements, but I lied. I do have an announcement to make, or something to ask the rest of you. This actually, and he's a very lucky man, is going to be the last full council meeting for Phil. So I hope you will all join me in thanking Phil for everything he's done for this council. He has a really pragmatic approach to local government. I have to say that over the years I've really enjoyed working with Phil. So if you'd just join me in saying thank you, Phil, for all you've done. We won't make you make a speech unless you want to.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, I've just got one announcement, thank you, Chairman, and it's just to say that there's been an article in the Yorkshire Post on Saturday and the front page of the Mercury on Wednesday, which is the calls for bullying inquiry at the Council. Just to let members know that I have made a response, and that has been issued either in hard copy in your pigeonholes or electronically. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to members' questions on notice. There are three. Councillor Potter, please ask your first question.
Thank you, Chair. Question to the Leader of Council. In September 2015, you and the Chief Executive signed the annual governance statement. How many times in the next 9 months did you discuss this matter with the Chief Executive, and what were the outcomes of your discussions?
Thank you for that question, Mike. The annual government statement is signed by the Chief Executive and myself in my role as leader, in line with the requirements of the Code of Practice on Local Authority Accounting, and it is a very important document in providing adequate controls within this council. As a member of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee, you will know that in its audit role, the committee has delegated responsibility to review the council's corporate governance arrangements. An update was presented to your committee on the 16th of January, at which you were present, I believe. In answer to your question, I do not keep a note of how often the Chief Executive and I discuss the annual governance statement. It is such an integral part of the everyday work of this council, I doubt if we ever meet without touching on several areas that are covered by this document. I do, however, try to stick to my member role, which is policy, and leave delivery to the Chief Executive.
Thank you. Supplementary, Chair.
Okay.
Going back to what we were doing at scrutiny, because we were looking at this quite recently, and we pay a substantial amount of money for the auditors, and I hope all members agree that this is essential to assure us of sound financial management and scrupulously accurate budgets, which you might have seen in the minutes from earlier on that I asked last time. This annual governance statement sets out written concerns of the auditors about the council performance, including contracts that are missing, no copies of contracts, service level agreements missing, audit actions not carried out for over 2 years, no corporate monitoring of contracts. But one specific item that I noted from scrutiny was that regarding our payroll agreements with the City of York, it said last year, in agreed actions, bi-monthly monitoring through the management team to continue through into 2015 to 16 and beyond. So could I just ask that you confirm you've had at least 6 meetings in the last year to address these issues, please?
Are you asking me if I've had 6 meetings with the Chief Executive to address these issues?
Yes. At least 6 meetings, as in 2 bi-monthly meetings.
I don't really understand why you're asking me that. The Chief Executive and I meet far more than that. We've had far more than 6 meetings. I don't really think it's my role to be monitoring the actions in the action plan. That is for the Chief Executive and the Chief Financial Officer. Thank you.
Yeah, but surely these are actions that the whole of Council should be overseeing with the senior management to ensure that all these actions are carried out.
I think overview and scrutiny do that. At least I hope you do.
Okay. Please ask your second question.
Right. Me again. Right, thank you. This is a question to the Chair of Overview and Scrutiny. Do you consider that the draft minutes of the overview and scrutiny meeting on the 28th of July 2016 do justice to the questioning of the audit report or the annual governance statement?
Councillor Aitken? I'm picking Councillor Aitken because he was there. Councillor Keel wasn't there. He was chairing it at the time.
Yeah, in reply to your question, the draft minutes of the overview and scrutiny meeting on the 28th have not been approved by the committee. The draft minutes will be considered by the overview and scrutiny committee on the meeting of the 8th. It is at the meeting on the 8th that the members of the committee will be able to consider whether or not the draft minutes are a true and accurate record of that meeting. It is not for the full council to consider the accuracy of draft minutes of a committee before the committee has an opportunity to approve them. Nor is it the role of the council to debate the accuracy of the minutes of a committee after they have been approved. The minutes of the committee meeting provide a record of decisions of the meeting. The minutes are not a verbatim record of the committee meeting. Anybody wishing to know what questions were put to the officers by the councillors on the committee and the answers received may listen to the audio recording of the committee meeting, which is available on the website of Rydale District Council, and local libraries have a facility for this. Against that background, the short answer to your question is that it is for the Overview and Scrutiny Committee meeting on the 8th of September 2016 to decide if the draft minutes are an accurate record of the decisions of that committee. They are not meant to be a record of all the questions and answers.
Okay, Councillor Potter.
Yeah. Well, I was actually asking the chair of the Overview and Scrutiny if he considered that those draft minutes represented an accurate record of that occasion, and he hasn't really given me an answer to that.
Can we have a supplementary question?
Yeah, certainly. So, as I conducted a very lengthy question and answer session at that meeting, scrutinising the many weaknesses noted in writing from our internal auditors, do you consider this line of questioning didn't warrant mentioning in the minutes or even in the draft minutes?
As far as I'm concerned, the draft minutes list the decisions made. The detail, as I explained, is already recorded for people to look at, and the council and the committee will discuss that on the 8th.
Thank you. Councillor Clark, please ask your question.
Thank you, Chair. Question to the Leader of Council. Do you agree with the internal audit comments on contract management and corporate arrangements? And can you, as Leader, give an explanation of how we've got into this state?
Well, first of all, Councillor Clark, I don't agree with you that we are in a state, as you put it. The audit found that the arrangements for managing risk are satisfactory. The whole purpose of carrying out an audit is to flush out any weaknesses and to identify where improvements can be made. This is what audit did, and those improvements are being actioned.
Yes, Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. Once I find myself in agreement with the Leader of Council. Yes, audit is designed to flush out weaknesses. So not this year, not last year, but the year before. So that would be 14-15. The internal auditors flushed out a weakness with the payroll arrangement. Not a proper contract monitoring, no service level agreement in a TECL type arrangement. I put in the ad TECL, in a TECL type arrangement in, and my words, not theirs. Last year, it was brought to councillors, by the way. Last year, the internal auditors said, in your words, Chair, flushed out that the arrangements with York had not got proper monitoring of the contract. There was no service level agreement. In other words, it wasn't good enough. More flushing. This year we have a report from the internal auditors. By the way, each of those last 2 years, you had signed the annual governance statement to say what this council would be doing
about this problem. To a question, Councillor Clark.
It is, Chair. It's a slightly longer question than per normal. And on that basis, what good was the flushing out of the internal auditors if for now we're into the third year when under your leadership and your signature on the annual governance statement, nothing has happened to improve the situation, and we are one level above unacceptable in internal auditor, i.e. it's gone down since the good old days of Councillor Wainwright's stewardship. Thank you, Chair.
I'm absolutely sure I can rely on my members on overview and scrutiny to make sure that the action plan is implemented.
Right. Moving on to agenda item 13, proposed joint public assets board for York, North Yorkshire and East Riding. Can the head of economy and infrastructure please brief members on this report? Mr. Rudd.
Good evening, members. The report beginning on page 143 of your agenda introduces a proposal that has come to this authority from the local enterprise partnership, and in essence the proposal is that the existing infrastructure board for the LEP area, upon which all of the local authorities are represented, and council leader Councillor Cowling sits upon that, expands its remit to become the Infrastructure and Joint Assets Board. The proposal follows similar moves in other parts of the country, including the Leeds City Region and Sheffield City Regions. And in essence, what this is seeking to do is provide a forum that allows the major public land holders to consider how best these holdings can be used to support growth ambitions, to support the economy, and to support the effective operation of those organisations. It's very important for me to stress to you that the proposal here is to create a forum for those organisations to discuss together and consider together the use of those assets. However, the sovereignty in terms of the decision as to how to use the asset remains entirely with the organisation that holds it. This isn't in any way reducing the council's ability to control its assets. It merely introduces an opportunity to work with others at a wider scale. The proposal is that should this be supported, the Homes and Communities Agency would be given a place on the board, and they're an important organisation when it comes to government funding for housing and regeneration and the management of large sites. In the future, I would expect that a number of other players will be asked to at least on occasion attend the board to discuss their holdings, particularly in North Yorkshire, not so much Rydale, but in the A1 and A19 corridors. The MOD have a number of very significant sites, and they're looking at the future of those. Any suggestion of disposal of those could certainly impact upon development options in that part of the world. But also bodies such as Network Rail, the health service, etc., are also important holders of land. This proposal has already been to local government North Yorkshire and York, and the response was broadly supportive, but with a desire to sharpen the wording of the proposals to make absolutely clear that there is no challenge to sovereignty of the holder of the asset, and that this is a managerial tool to promote joint working. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Oh, Councillor Cowling.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to move the recommendation on page 143 of the agenda. Do you have a seconder?
Yeah.
Thank you. If I could just speak briefly about why I'm supporting this.
Questions? Councillor Andrews.
Chairman, I seem to recall some concern about layers of bureaucracy and so on, which resulted in things like Yorkshire Forward being disposed of, and regional government being disposed of, and so on. I'm just wondering how much, what will the cost of be of administering this new board, and how will that cost be distributed and allocated between the respective authorities, or how much will it result in an increase in the LEPS budget?
Chairman, there's no increase in staffing or increase in budget costs associated with this. This is an expansion of the role of an existing decision-making body, which is the Infrastructure Board, and this is instead to improve the working between these organisations, not to add to staffing complements.
Any more questions? Councillor Clark?
Yes, Chair, I've got one or two questions. I think it's a brilliant concept in terms of the working together and the assets and things that Julian referred to. But my questions, and I have more than one, are the concerns about the democracy of it and the control of it, because if anybody knows what's happening in the democracy, in who's doing what with whom and where in North Yorkshire, Yorkshire as a whole, Leeds City Region, etc., the fire authorities, please tell me. But we've got in here, first question, how many other councils have been consulted so far?
Chairman, the paper has been sent to all of the 9 authorities in the North Yorkshire East Riding patch, and authorities are starting to consider this, and the responses will be dealt with at the next meeting of the Infrastructure Board in mid-October.
Now, Scott.
Supplementary to that one, then, so is this the only one that's having the pleasure of your explanation, or is somebody going from the LEP to each one of the councils?
This is the only local authority that I've attended so far on this, but the chief execs and leaders of each of the local authorities were present at Local Government North Yorkshire and York when this was debated and was presented by James Farrow, who's the chief operating officer at the LEP.
As I suspected. We've got the board at some point in this. It says the board is such boards are middle of page 146. Such boards are not necessarily restricted to public estate holders and can be open to attendance from quasi-sector organisation, private sector stakeholders, etc. So anybody with any land or anything else can go along because they're a private stakeholder, is what that sentence is saying to you. And then elsewhere in the board, it says it will be members of the board only and nobody else without, you know, 15 levels of security and 14 passes to get in. So I think there's quite a lot of tidying up to do here. Am I missing something? Because which of those two is it? Is the board going to be open to any member of the stakeholder, which is a wonderfully woolly phrase, i.e. somebody with some land is clearly a private stakeholder, or are they going to be in private and exempt, etc.?
Chairman, I think the report and proposal is reasonably clear in that the initial membership of the board is are existing members of the Infrastructure Board, who were the 9 local authorities in the patch, the Local Enterprise Partnership, and that would be expanded to include the Homes and Communities Agency. The terms of reference, I think, does make reasonably clear that it would have to be a decision of that board were any other organisations to join the board full time. The report, or the section of report that you refer to at 2.6, talks about other potential future members, either full time or in relation to specific issues and sites. And in that respect, there is some flexibility needed in that certain major projects could require adjoining land owners, be they quasi-public sector or private sector, to join with the public sector to work up ideas. And that seems to me to be a sensible approach. But I think that the terms of reference are clear that any expansion, either full-time or a one-off discussion in relation to a particular site, would be a matter for the local authorities and LEP to decide.
Final question, Chair. Am I right to be concerned that this is likely not to be of benefit, because it says here in 2.7, in the first bullet point, advantages in efficiency and effectiveness and so on. Now, anything that we vote on of going down this line, we're looking at risk assessments and financial benefits and whatever else, and I'm sort of really highlighting it, is what do you see, and I realise that it's unanswerable, but the question needs asking, what are the potential financial benefits to Rydell?
Chairman, at this point, we're talking only of the principle of establishing this this forum, so the organisations can come together, consider the assets they all have and how they can be better used together and help meet economic and growth ambitions. So I don't want to link this to any particular holding of this authority, and I think it's fair to say that in terms of land holdings, Rydell's asset base is small, really very small, compared to organisations such as the County Council, particularly through their farms, and Ministry of Defence, etc. So in those terms, we don't expect to see a significant change in the way that we operate. However, it would seem to me to be very sensible for us to participate in partnership at a strategic level with others to seek to influence the use of public land. And in essence, that's what this is talking about.
Thank you for all those answers, very much indeed.
Councillor Cowling, please move the recommendations.
And I believe I've got a seconder.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think Julian's given a really good explanation of why this forum for people to get together and discuss all publicly owned assets is really important. I think some of you in this chamber, quite a few of you, will remember the problems we had when we as a council tried to buy what we considered to be a strategic piece of land in Pickering that belonged to the North Yorkshire County Council, and there wasn't this forum where this conversation could take place. So it, from a member point of view, probably it was easier for officers, but from a member point of view, I felt that that conversation never took place. And I feel you would probably all be able to make examples within your own wards of where similar things have happened. I think with the infrastructure changes that are going to be needed around Rydale, passing through Rydale with the A64, I think to have that place where we can have that conversation with the people who own all these public assets is going to be a really big thing for us. So I hope you will feel able to support this.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes. I'm very happy to do collaborative working because I think we need to deliver things. And one thing that does spring to mind is my colleague proposed a footbridge and a car park in Norton, which is on British Rail land. And without this kind of collaborative working, we may not be able to deliver such a project. So I think it's really important that we do start speaking to partners and try and deliver what the public need and want, because with the infrastructure changes that are coming, we're going to have to work smarter. So I'm happy to support this.
Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Carling, do you want to say anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, I think it's time to put it to that motion has been moved and seconded. I'll put it to the vote.
26 votes for, no votes against, one abstention.
Okay, so the motion is carried. Now we move on to business from the last council meeting, item 9. Councillor Clark, please move your first motion, and then once it's seconded, you can make a speech. I just want to say there's quite a lot on this. Everybody's got their agenda. I do understand that you had many answers from the chief executive on June the 24th. So if you could sort of build that into your speech. Thank you.
Sorry, Joe, I didn't quite understand what you were saying there.
That you had a lot of answers to many of these things from the chief executive on June the 24th, as I understand. So bearing that in mind, where you've got to tonight with this question, if you could bear that in mind and just speak on the things that you still require to know or want to discuss or debate. Do we have a seconder, by the way? Councillor Thornton. Councillor Clark.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So let's go through some of the things that we've got and or haven't got. We asked for share with members the option appraisals. Well, there weren't any option appraisals. It just happened. So we've got the answer to that one. There aren't any. Present members of the tendering document. Well, there isn't a tendering document, Chair. Because it is a local authority company. That's in writing. It's also in writing that it isn't a local authority company, but as it's done with a TECL agreement, and TECL agreements apply to local authorities companies, then we'll have to guess that it is a local authority company. So there was no tendering. The reasons for appointing IEZ, we still haven't got yet. They'd be nice to hear. As opposed to anybody else, and how we selected IEZ. Share with members of the contract with IEZ. Well, that's an interesting document. Interesting document on a good day, that is. The IEZ popping an invoice into this place for its expenses, and they're up with the MPs, IEZ, because those, I think we've only up to the end of the year, I think we'd put in something like £8,000-£10,000 of expenses into them. No receipts, nothing at all, just a signature on an invoice. So we've got the answer to that one. Share with members the work done so far at a cost of 50,000. Well, that's a little bit more difficult, and I'd quite like to know what some of that is, but at least one bit we've got out is the membership fee, which we were told was £5. It plummeted to £1. The £5 is in the minutes, the £1 is in the fluffy bits. And I have here a copy of an invoice for £5, plus £1,000 worth of VAT. So we managed to get that out, and it's only taken a couple of months of digging to find out. Consult with members their priorities in the future of RDC. That would be interesting to hear, because there's going to be cuts in services, and those cuts in services are going to come we don't know where. But if you're going to cut the workforce down by the amount that it's threatened to be cut down, which looks like best part of 40 people, unless somebody can explain where there's 40 people who've been wasting their time, then if there isn't an explanation as to where they've been wasting their time, then there's going to be a cut in services. Thank you, Chair. I'll continue further down when I come to the summing up.
Does anybody wish to speak on this? Councillor Thornton.
Yeah, I'll reserve my rights, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Councillor Cowley?
I'll try and be quick about this. Councillor Clark has had a written response to many of the questions that he's asked tonight. And what I would say is that if he would attend meetings that he's invited to with group leaders, he would have had all this information. And I'm sure that a lot of you feel that you already know some of this information. I think tonight is just a showcasing night for Councillor Clark. If I'd wanted to know these things, if I felt I didn't know these things, which that would have been a really serious situation if I hadn't known the answers to these, then I think I would have asked for a bit of time with the Chief Executive and come and sit down and work through the questions. I don't think this is the forum for asking questions like this, nor do I think it is Councillor Clark's job to set the work schedule of this council by requesting meetings.
Anybody else? Councillor Duncan. Keane.
Duncan, yeah. I'm not sure that three P&R meetings are required to discuss this issue, especially if the Chief Executive has provided a full response to Councillor Clark's questions. However, any member of the public who takes an interest in this very costly and very important restructuring of this council has not had access to the response that Councillor Clark has received. Could this information, as far as possible, be made available to the public so that anyone who does take an interest, admittedly a very small number of people, can access that information like any other piece of information that comes before us as councillors?
It will be made public where appropriate. Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Potter.
Thank you. I'm rather pleased Councillor Duncan brought that one up anyway. I can hear the cogs whirring around the room, with members obviously thinking, oh yeah, the loony Liberals are at it again, just to waste our time. And we'll have to put up with the usual nonsense, then automatically vote against it. So, glad to say. So I'm just wondering if any of those cogs are thinking, what are they on about? Why are they asking these questions? And have you all made the effort to find out? Do you understand what we're trying to get at? Are you curious as to why we spend hours studying agendas, minutes, reports, digging this stuff out? Because the leader says that we should have known all this, but it doesn't seem to be available in minutes and agendas and even questions that we've asked. And it's because we're trying to do the job that we've volunteered to do, that we promised to do, and that we got elected to do. This is represent the people of Rydale in our wards, all of us, presumably. And we're trying to ensure that this council runs efficiently, effectively and transparently, as Councillor Duncan asked for as well, for all the ratepayers. And isn't that what we should all be doing? So, heaven forbid, we could even work together to achieve the same end, and perhaps we should all have a meeting to discuss this. We could call it a full council meeting. So, don't you want to know the explanations to all the points in this motion? So, we've had replies to questions that just don't match up to the policy. They don't match up to the accounting. They don't match up to the constitution. However, if the controlling group are content to allow the council to move in completely mysterious ways, there's little anyone else can do about it, except perhaps the electorate. But of course, at the moment, there's no way they can understand it either. So I'd rather like to get the answers to all these questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Councillor Ives.
I just want to respond to a point there made by Councillor Potter when he mentioned the electorate, because it's a matter which I've spoke about a number of times in this chamber. The electorate have made a decision. They made a decision at the ballot box, and they chose competent management. And we, on this side of the chamber, understand that we should operate the council in a professional, business-like environment. That means we look after the policy, and the officers, i.e. mainly the chief executive, implement that policy. There's a clear distinction. What you are doing here is undermining that process. It's bad management, and to be quite frankly, it's just a waste of time. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Thornton, do you want to say anything?
Thank you. The IEC thing was strange to me, because I think I must have missed a lot of meetings when it was discussed, and it suddenly appeared on the table. And it was even more of a mystery when I read the explanation of the details of their proposals, and couldn't quite see in the proposals where they expected to make massive savings or what the savings were to be. But they talked about things like behaviour-based assessment, the behaviour of staff and town teams. And these were concepts which hadn't come to full council and were not explained in any of the literature that I came across. And I, when I read that there was going to be less reliance on higher paid specialists, I was thinking that there'd be a cull of senior management. And I'm not entirely sure whether it will be senior management that will be reduced in the IEC process or the foot soldiers. And I've yet to hear quite where we are with the IEC process. And if there will be a less reliance on higher paid specialists. An appropriate range of housing, appropriate for whom, and how is this all going to be defined and worked through? It would be hugely helpful if this expensive piece of work spread over several years was explained either in a document or, better still, debated in a meeting, and that we were cognizant of all the ramifications of this. And we find probably now that having failed to understand or debate this, we're probably halfway through the process. To me, the finances are mysterious, the budgeting curious, and uncertain. So the whole thing is a little bit of concern. And of course, the controlling group and the leader may be perfectly happy with this, but when I read through the documentation, I don't have that level of contentment.
Okay, Councillor Clark, would you like to sum up, please?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd like to start off with Councillor Cowling's comment about not going to a meeting. I've been told several times in this, oh, this was at the chief executive's appraisal meeting. You didn't attend. No, I don't go to the chief executive's appraisal meeting because the appraisal of the chief executive is the job of the leader of council. And I certainly don't go to an appraisal meeting to discuss what should be out in the public domain. And it isn't. And it hasn't been. And it has been hidden. And we spent last year 40,000 that, despite the wonderful policy laid out by the Conservative group, wasn't even in the budget. And were no planned redundancies in the budget for any of the senior managers. And we committed ourselves to best part of 200,000 plus another large figure, so we're over 300,000 spent, not a penny of it mentioned in last year's budget. That is good planning. That is good management. Absolutely superb, Chair. So, what else have we got in this pile of rubbish? The biggest one I want to know the answer to is, how is it in this public chamber we have been told £1? No, we were told £5. Then we were not quite told, because it's not in the minutes, it's in the fluffy bit at the edge, £5. And there is an invoice in this building, of which I've got a copy here, membership of iEasy, £5,000. But nobody wants to debate it. Nobody wants to discuss it. Unless it's done in a private meeting with the chief executive, with no minutes, no recording, not the public, not available. That, Chair, is not the way to run a council. I think Councillor Potter is absolutely right that it will be considered a silly Liberal approach, and the employees in here and the public should not know what's going on. It's far best for them to be kept in quiet. But he can at least hold his head up in here in relation to Councillor Ives's comment about elections and what the public did. Because when he stood a mere 6 months after those elections, he got elected and the Conservative candidate didn't. But that may just be a coincidence and may just be his good luck. But on that basis, Chair, he is the one person not to be attacked in this council chamber for not being part of the massive Conservative vote, which some of us think might have had, just might have had something to do with the general election. On that basis, Chair, we would like a recorded vote on this, but we know what the result is likely to be, and a recorded vote will probably take us a little bit of time because we need to make a note of who it was that voted in case it isn't in the minutes next time round. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Clark. That's... just hang on, Councillor Ives. Let's put this to the vote, please. I want to get this meeting finished. As the motion has been moved and seconded, debated, I'll put it to the vote. Please vote.
Five votes for, 21 votes against, one abstention.
Okay, the motion is lost. And now I think this is the appropriate time to have a 10-minute break. Okay, well, that's more or less 15 minutes, which is over the time, so I propose we move on. Councillor Clark, please move your second motion. Then once it's seconded, you can make the speech. You didn't hear, sorry. It was on. The button was on. I was saying we've had 15 minutes now. I think that's enough. We can wait for the we're not waiting for the others to come in. So if you would like to move your second motion and have it seconded, please do.
Can I propose an amendment to that, please, Chair?
I think you can. I think you may be able to do that when I've moved the motion.
Can we move it first, and then we'll take an amendment?
That's what I was expecting, Chair. It's all right.
Councillor Clark, I'm seconded.
Yes, you want to watch your position, you see. First meeting here, he was taking over the group leader's job, so your position is probably not safe. Right. I'd like to move this motion and speak to it before we have any amendments, if that doesn't upset Councillor Potter too much.
Can we have a seconder first, please? Councillor Thornton, thank you.
Chair, this motion does not say there is bullying in this council. What it does say, and I hope says, and has, and I have been saying, and I have been saying publicly for nearly a year, and in private to the chief executive and others, that there is a suspicion of bullying, and there is not the evidence that there isn't the bullying. And it is our responsibility to make sure that there is not bullying. And the chief executive's press release is absolutely ideal. It says that it is our responsibility under the health and safety legislation. But when you have people who are off sick and you bump into them and they've had a panic attack and they've been told to dot 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 get on with driving their bin wagon down the road. That's what's happened. I can't change.
No, I'm just saying, be careful on the personal side.
Oh, I will, Chair. Very, very careful.
You can go exempt if you want.
Very, very careful. Very, very careful. And if you have people who ring you up and say, why has this happened to one employee and not another, and you haven't a clue what they're talking about, member of the public rings you up and you then track down what has happened. When you find that there's people being and taken to the and taken others to the under the harassment policy in the council, and when you get people who members of the public, when you've raised this issue in public, contact you and say, yes, this person, I believe, was bullied, and these others, I believe, was bullied. None of this is court-level proof, but it is all a management level that means you should be looked into, examined, and traced. And I'm not going to take lessons from across the corner that was saying no, no about bullying, because her own party has not got a good track record on that issue. And no, Chair, they haven't. You haven't. But it can happen, and what I'm wanting to do in this motion here is say, let's look at it, make sure it is or isn't happening, and take the appropriate action. Thank you, Chair.
Somebody second that? Want to speak?
Yes, Councillor
Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. I reserve my right.
Do you want to submit your amendment, Councillor Potter?
Yes. Do you want me to read it out?
Is it seconded?
Yep, please do.
Yes. Right.
Councillor Andrews.
Right. So, after the issue of bullying has been raised at full council, and I would like to delete everything after that and replace it with "on four occasions," there has been no satisfactory response from the leader of council. It was raised with the chief executive on several occasions, the first being about 2 years ago. Again, nothing materialised. Little one, clearly the administration has neither the ability nor the jurisdiction to address this issue. Little two, the leader and her group have clearly no will to have the issue examined. This council therefore resolves to bring in an outside organisation to carry out an initial survey into the possibility of bullying from the 1st of April 2014 to date. Any such body to be acceptable to the Chief Executive, Unison and the political groups on the council. Little one, to report back, interim or final, to Rydale District Council by the end of 2016. Little two, to be funded to a maximum cost of 1/20th of the final redundancy package of the 165 post. And little three, the report to go to policy and resources as a Part B item. Ends.
Councillor Andrews, do you wish to say anything?
Well, it's Councillor Potter.
I reserve my right, thank you.
Councillor Potter, may I wish to speak to
him? Oh, right, sorry. The Chief Executive wishes to say something.
Well, first of all, Chairman, the thing I'm querying is that I dispute that it was raised with me on several occasions over 2 years ago. I really do. So what we're looking at is whether or not an amendment, which is factually, in my opinion, inaccurate, can be upheld. The rest of the content I have no issue with. There's a difference between raising something in council on four occasions and saying that I have had knowledge of something over 2 years. I absolutely disagree with that completely. There's a difference between a private conversation about something which has been rumoured, and I would have to check when that happened, but I really do not feel comfortable as the head of paid service accepting an amendment that accuses me of doing nothing for 2 years, and I'm sure the mover and seconder will appreciate my point of view and how we deal with that, because I'm not happy to accept that. I may have to declare my own interest.
Would you withdraw that, Councillor Potter?
Chair, can I add a personal point of explanation at this point?
Councillor Clark,
it says in the press release that has been referred to earlier today that I didn't respond to at the time. To date, I have received no complaint from a member. I am that member. I have raised that with the Chief Executive.
You have not complained to me, Councillor Clark. You have not complained.
Chief Executive, I can list now. I came to you and mentioned the A64 carry on in driving when he rang saying he had a panic attack. I came in to tell you that I thought there was bullying down at the depot. And I came in wondering how I was to broach the subject. And when I got here, a bin guy had been backed into. I raised with you.
Chairman, this really is not an attack like this on our chief executive.
It's an attack on me.
Like this is totally
Chair,
not
that's an attack on me.
Move it.
Shoveling it under the carpet again.
It's
and if it's shoveling it under the carpet...
Councillor Clark, it's trying to protect personal information.
But the personal information, Chair, is out. No member has... To date, I have received no complaint from a member.
Okay, Councillor Clark.
I have raised it with the Chief Executive on several occasions.
The motion has been put forward to go...
Yes, and I'm speaking against that, Chair, and I believe I've got 3 minutes to speak against it, if I so wish. I wish to speak against it going into exempt.
Please stick to the
subject. I thought you moved exempt, Chair, or somebody did. I thought the exempt had been moved. If it hasn't, then that's not...
It's been moved and seconded, and they're speaking against it, which is a...
Okay, Councillor Clark, speak against it.
Without mentioning any...
Don't mention any exempt information, please.
A point of order. Can I ask on what grounds... the exempt motion is being raised, because there are only certain specified statutory grounds upon which it can be raised.
Disclosure of personal information. Councillor Ives.
Chairman, can I ask the council's solicitor's advice on this, please? Because from my understanding, the council can go into exempt on certain grounds, and it makes a decision on that. And those exempt grounds are set out in legislation. However, when it comes to confidential information that relates to a private individual, the council has no option as to whether that should be in the public arena or not. Whereas exempt items, the council can decide whether to disclose it or not. Confidential items that relate to the person must be held in private, and therefore under the legislation this council has no option but to go private, well, exempt.
Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. I think I can help on this, because this whole topic on bullying is very important for the health and well-being of the officers of this council. I don't know whether there is bullying or not, and I think if I can possibly persuade my leader not to mention any personal episodes of potential bullying.
No, I have not.
We have this discussion in public, on the public record, and that... it is of overwhelming importance that this is dealt with and not hidden away in exempt. And I can understand that people should not be identified and will not be identified further in these discussions. Thank you.
Chair, further point of explanation, I have not given any names or any detail. I have given examples of the sort of thing that has happened, and my reason for doing that is because I am forced into denying the statement that there has been no complaint from a member. Now, I can list 4 or 5 that I have raised. I'm quite happy not to, but to say that I haven't is a personal attack on me, which I was quite happy to accept until we got to this point in a meeting when I'm being accused of making a false statement. And on that basis, there may be a way through this. I have no intention of going into personal details whatsoever. But to say that I have not raised it, that I don't know whether others have raised bullying or not, but to say that no member has raised it is wrong, Chair, and I have listed at least 2 and can list another 3 that have been raised with me. I give a very general point. the chief executive asked me whether or not there was what the substance behind this motion was when it went in the middle of June, and I told her three areas which may be worth looking into. Because I don't know, I can't and will not accuse an individual of bullying. But all I can work on, and you don't get, if somebody is bullied, they don't go down a tribunal route instantly. They may not have the money. They don't do all the complaining. They leave. They're sick. There's a whole string of things happen. And I have raised this with the chief executive, and that is all that he's saying. And I haven't got a diary date either. And if we're happier with it, it's only 18 months, we'll go with that. But I've been raising it publicly here for nearly a year, and it was way before that when I raised it in private, because I think it can't prove it, but there is enough evidence to make it needed to be looked into. And it mustn't, Chair, please, be swept into exempt. Now, I think Councillor Ives, and we don't often agree, but when we do, it's usually quite useful, that in terms of confidential, I have absolutely no need to mention any names or any further detail. My only reason for saying what I've said so far to that is the accusation that I have not raised any cases with the chief executive. Whether that accusation goes to others or not, I know not, because I don't know whether they've raised it or not. But I do know I have. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Bailey.
Just very briefly, Chairman, my point of concern was the interaction with our chief executive and those matters of paid staff, not the issues of bullying. And clearly, if that's an issue, I phrase that carefully, but if the issues of the work of our officers are at question, this isn't the place to debate it.
Councillor Ives.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It asked a question of the monitoring officer earlier in relation to the distinction between confidential personal information and exempt information. Please can I ask for clarification on that, because I do think under the law there is certain information which the council doesn't have an option as to whether it discloses it or not. The second point which I wish to ask the monitoring officer is that the amendment that has been put forward could give rise to an employment claim of a senior officer of this council. It's stating that something happened that in the officer's opinion did not. That could be construed as defamation of character. It could give rise to constructive dismissal claims. Now, if that's something council wishes to do, would it not be prudent to have a Section 5 report, in which case it would prevent this debate from going ahead until that report would be considered? So I would ask the monitoring officer to consider those two points I have made. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is a duty on this council not to disclose personal information in an open session. And if a member feels in the need to disclose personal information, the council meeting needs to go into exempt business. One of the categories, there are a number of categories of exempt business, and one of them is personal information. And another category relates to employment matters. So there are reasons why any mention of confidential matters or matters relating to staff should be kept as exempt information. The other point about employment law is that the council has a duty in relation to employees, and the head of paid service is an employee, to have a fair process. Should anybody wish to make a complaint or have an issue against a employee, and I include myself there, and any other officer of the council, that must be dealt with in accordance with due process. Mr. Chairman, raising issues of this kind in a full council meeting is not due process. And if any member has a concern about an employee, they need to make a complaint in accordance with the procedures of the council. And this forum is not part of those procedures. So I think, Mr. Chairman, there is an issue of fact in Councillor Potter's amendment. There is clearly a statement there which is not an accepted fact. And I think the way forward is for Councillor Potter to consider withdrawing that statement, which is in dispute, and allowing his amendment to go forward on that basis. And I would respectfully ask all members to be extremely cautious when making statements about officers which are potentially damaging. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Potter, are you happy to accept that?
He withdraws that statement.
If he withdraws the statement, and as long as personal information
is not disclosed, then it can go. Then we can go ahead.
No, you can't find the need of council. This is just. Oh, sorry, because it's been moved, exempt.
Yeah.
It's been moved. Well, then members could vote on.
Right, Chair. I think we've come to a conclusion on that early bit. So if we could amend that again, so it says on four occasions, and then there has been no satisfactory response from the Leader of Council and nothing materialised. Thus removing the section where it says it was raised with the Chief Executive on several occasions, the first being about 2 years ago. As that clearly is a dispute between two people where something has obviously happened, but there seems to be no evidence that it's happened. Is that acceptable?
Yep. Back to the amendment, as long as you stick clearly to that thing about there's no personal information.
Right, okay.
Yes, I'll read that. This is delete all after at least and replace with four occasions. There has been no satisfactory response from the Leader of Council. Point little one, clearly the administration has neither the ability nor the jurisdiction to address this issue. Little two, the leader and her group have clearly no will to have the issue examined. This council therefore resolves to bring in an outside organisation to carry out an initial survey into the possibility of bullying from 1st of April 2014 to date. Any such body to be acceptable, the Chief Executive Unison and the political groups on the council. One, to report back, interim or final, to RDC by the end of 2016. Two, to be funded for the maximum cost of 1/20th of the final redundancy package of the 165 post. And three, the report to go to policy and resources as part of B item. As a part B item. Councillor Potter, are you going to speak on this amendment?
Yes, thank you. So whether all members believe this or not, there have been accusations of both bullying and of a culture of bullying at Rydale District Council. These have been going on for a significant time and raised four times at full council now, with no sign of action to address the issue. This motion proposes a way to find if these allegations have any foundation. If there's nothing to find, the inquiries will reveal nothing. To do nothing will make members complicit at the very time that bullying is most likely to affect performance and the commitment of staff already under threat of redundancy, which is another reason why many staff would be reticent to actually approach the chief executive with any accusations of bullying. To oppose this motion quite simply means that those members either condone bullying or pretend it doesn't exist. I trust any member voting against the motion will indicate which one of the two applies. Thank you.
Anybody wish to speak? Councillor Arnold.
Thank you, Chairman. I actually believe there is a culture of bullying. It's been going on this evening. For the first time when we're having prayers, all I could hear was Councillor Clark rattling his papers instead of respecting other people's wishes. For the first half hour of this programme, this evening, we were bullied by Councillor Clark when he could have asked all those questions before this meeting. And lastly, I firmly believe that our chief executive has been bullied in the last half hour. If I was her, I'd make a complaint.
And Councillor Wainwright.
Chairman, what we're hearing about bullying is a lot of hearsay. What if we got somebody in to look at bullying? All they're doing is chasing shadows. To me, to get an outside organisation in is absolutely ridiculous. There's no firm evidence put forward by anybody, as I understand it, to say there is bullying. Thank you, Chairman.
Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chairman. I think that clearly issues of bullying, were that to be found, are very serious, and nobody in this chamber would, I believe, ignore that. I also fully accept and have experience in other places of the difficulties when budgets are tightened, people fear for their jobs. It's a worrying time, and those put pressures on staff that have to be dealt with. All of these things are things that are part of the lives that we deal with on a daily basis. And we don't live in an ideal world often, and those things are difficult to cope with. However, bullying to me is a specific thing, and it's something that this council should, and I believe would and does, take very seriously. And all of us as councillors have an obligation, should we have any evidence of bullying, to come forward with that. And if we do have evidence and we don't come forward with that, in my view, we're in breach of the pledge that we sign in that book when we get elected. However, if we don't have evidence and we go on talking about bullying, then we're in severe danger committing the crime of making accusations that are unfounded, slander in effect. And I think that's even more serious. And so if any councillor in this council has any evidence of bullying, I fully believe and know that there is a process that they should go through with that evidence. And if there isn't any evidence, then they also have a duty not to cause slander and not to cause rumours, accusations, if you like, which can damage the council and the people that work for it. And yes, it is an issue of nonsense in some senses to be treating this like we are. It's much more serious than that. But I don't believe that if anyone has any evidence, that they should sit on it. They should have come forward. That should have been put forward. It should have been dealt with, and it should have been put aside and either taken forward or not in accordance with those policies. And I think it's a serious matter, Chairman. We shouldn't be taking it trivially as a political issue.
Councillor Andrews.
Thank you. In response to Councillor Arnold's what he said earlier, bullying is really serious. It's not shuffling papers, and it's not having little squabbles in. It's not respectful. It's not bullying, though. Bullying is something completely different. Bullying is where you can't come to work, or you feel that you go to the doctor. You can't feel as though you can fulfil your day's work or whatever. You take time off sick. Systematic bullying is a serious issue. Councillor Clark may have been disrespectful shuffling papers, but that isn't bullying. And I do think we've talked about transparency tonight, about the IEZ transparency, things like that, but I think this is something that must be transparent. We must keep it in the public domain, and we must, I think, do it independently. We need to get somebody independent in, because Councillor Ives at the last meeting wanted us to get rid of the members panel, when clearly I think the members panel is more important now than ever. Fortunately, that was lost, and we do still have the members panel. But I think this has been going on long enough, and we need to really thrash it out tonight and get a clear and decisive way forward with this issue.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I mean, I too have heard rumours of bullying. I've heard it from, for example, friends of people who are employed in this authority. I've heard it not concentrated on the manual staff. I've also heard it about people in the offices. I don't know if it's true, but there are so many of these rumours going around that it suggests that there might be an element of truth in them. The question is whether or not rumours, which some members think could be well-founded, is a matter for us as members. And what is a matter for us as members is the efficiency of this council and the way it presents itself to the public. And my experience of running any kind of office is that a happy office is an efficient office, because the people who are in that office are more likely to go the extra mile than those who are unhappy, who are likely to say, that's what I'm paid to do, I'm not going to do a stroke more. It affects whether they deal with customers with a smile or not. You don't have to smile when you're dealing with a customer. You don't have to give a good impression of the council when you're dealing with a customer. All you need to do is just do your job. Now, if there are these concerns, and they have been raised, and I understand specific concerns, from Councillor Clark, specific concerns have been raised in regard to specific people with the Chief Executive. If these concerns have been raised, then they need to be looked at in order to ensure that the council is seen to be efficient, that its members and staff are dealing with the public with a cheerful and open and happy way. And I would therefore support this motion.
It's the amendment we're still debating.
Yes, well, what I say about the what I've said about the motion also applies to the amendment, Chairman.
If
no action has been taken for so long, when this matter has been raised, and we've all heard it raised over the last few years, if no action has been taken by the existing administration and the officers, then perhaps you ought to ask somebody from outside to actually come and
I would dispel those rumours or advise us what the true situation is.
Yep. Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. I had the privilege of being the civil service medical officer for a number of years, and one of my jobs was to do what were known as breakdown medicals. Breakdown medicals were mainly for teachers. There were massive changes in the curriculum, the way of behaving within the schools, new headmasters and so on. And I also had the privilege of working thereafter with a number of people who were extremely slow to recover, if ever they did, from prolonged bullying. And it affected not only their mental health, it affected their physical health. In a very large study from a professor of organizational psychology at Manchester, they had a large-scale survey, and one in ten respondents had been the victim of bullying in the preceding 6 months. And half of all respondents had witnessed bullying in the previous 5 years. And there is a further study which suggests that if you witness bullying, it's almost as bad as being bullied yourself in person. And they go on to quote, the type of organizational culture in which bullies are likely to flourish is being characterized by radical change, a climate of insecurity, e.g. the threat of redundancy, a strong style, macho style of management, hierarchical structures, low levels of staff participation or consultation, excessive work demands, a lack of procedures to tackle bullying and harassment issues, downsizing, restructuring and radical organizational change that frequently leads to increased workload, lack of role clarity and heightened anxiety and uncertainty about job futures. And so it goes on. And when I read this, I thought, well, this really reflects some of the experience that we have at the present in this council of massive changes in the workloads and the concerns about redundancies. And they finally say organizations should conduct regular workplace surveys to establish stress and health levels and to monitor the prevalence of bullying among their employees. So all I'm suggesting is that we should have monitoring of the prevalence of bullying in accordance with this recommendation from a professor who has studied this in depth. And if we haven't responded to the suggestions from Councillor Clark by running one of these surveys, then perhaps we should do it as an external activity, a brilliant suggestion from Councillor Potter. Thank you.
Councillor Farnell.
I have been the staff member champion since the AGM in 2015. To date, I have had no member of staff or union representative come to me with regards to bullying. I am also in regular contact with the HR manager where no indication of any bullying allegations have been identified. Therefore, I am currently content that no bullying exists at this point in time. If staff are not coming forward, we cannot deal with fresh air.
Right. Councillor Janet Dean, and remember that we're talking about the amendment here.
Thank you, Chair. It's just just a brief comment. Could extreme stress be misinterpreted for bullying? Because those under extreme stress might misinterpret some of the requests made upon them and deem it to be a possible bullying situation.
Councillor Shields.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I've been on this council, as Matt Neils, you all know, for longer than anybody else. I'm not just boasting, it's just a matter of fact. I didn't set out for that sort of thing. But during that time, I have been involved when there was an earlier council, which was larger in a sense, and had many more committees, and one therefore got involved with different members of staff who were obviously concerned in relation to a particular committee. And not once can I remember anybody in any department telling me that there was bullying going on. Yes, one can often hear people complaining about something, one little thing. We all do that in all kinds of walks of life. But nothing really serious. And when I think back over the years, there's not one occasion where anybody in any section of the council that I know of, I don't say that hasn't happened, people are asserting that this is happening, but I have never come across this at all. And I do not think it would be a good idea at all to go to an outside body to get somebody to come in and start investigating at a time when the council is trying to move forward in different ways to retain itself, because I'm very much worried that if we go much further, the council itself may not exist. But let's hope that we don't get to that point. But nevertheless, I think if there's going to be any kind of investigation or looking into this matter, then it should be a small group of people from this council, and preferably, hopefully, across the board, where anyone who feels they have been bullied can go to people on that group and discuss it. But as for going outside and making a whole lot more publicity, is not going to do the council any good, and I don't think it would help other people either, if they have been bullied, to come forward and suggest that this is the case. So I will vote against this, because whilst I certainly wouldn't agree with any kind of bullying anywhere, and I've seen sometimes in school in the past years where it has happened and you have to do something about it, but I think at the moment we don't need to go that far, and that in fact a small group of people, councillors, I don't know where they come from, but with different backgrounds, possibly different expertise, different experience, could come together and try and do something to alleviate the problem, if it is really a problem, but nowhere in any way to go seeking a huge outside body to come in and have masses of information, and goodness knows what sort of comments can come from the press. I'm afraid they're not here tonight, so I can say this.
Thank you, Councillor Shields.
That is my point, Chair.
Thank you. I'll take one more. Councillor Duncan.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairman. I've been on this council a lot shorter period than Mr. Shields has, but in that time, I too have never. No one has ever contacted me about bullying. An employee has contacted me about bullying in this council. I have no evidence of bullying in this council either. It sounds as if Councillor Clark admits he doesn't have any evidence either. However, if this motion is rejected tonight, it will not put this issue to bed. It will rumble on, be raised again and again. Accusations will continue to fly around this chamber. Councillor Clark is that type of person. However, given what we have heard tonight from Councillor Clark, I want a resolution to this issue. And I think the appointment of someone independent is actually a good idea to sorting this issue out. I do not think it is acceptable, I do not think it's good for the chief executive to... for a member to argue in public with the chief executive, and I think if we do not take action on this issue, then it will the situation will continue to deteriorate. Therefore, I will be support. I don't necessarily agree with all of the details in the amendment and the motion. However, I think something does need to be done. I think the appointment of someone from an independent organisation is a good idea, and I will not be accused of being involved in covering up any instance of bullying, if indeed any bullying has taken place. Therefore, I will be supporting this amendment and motion with the hope of finding a satisfactory resolution which will put this issue to bed once and for all.
Councillor Cowling.
What a horrible night. I think you've all witnessed tonight an incident of bullying, and I shall be putting a complaint in about that. There are members on this council who are persistently trying to destroy the council by painting pictures of bullying, the drip, drip, drip of innuendo, and if you say it often enough, mud sticks. Get it on the front page of the paper. Everybody believes what's written in the paper, don't they? You've stated that there's been no satisfactory response from the leader of council. It was satisfactory. Unfortunately, it just wasn't the response you wanted. I am quite certain that if our union reps had any suspicion at all of bullying, they would have reported it, as would our managers and employees and members. I have no intention of putting additional strain on our staff at the moment by asking them to participate in an inquiry. Your claims are totally outrageous and have no basis in truth at all. In fact, I am deeply worried that you make such claims and yet you don't act on them. Because, as Jim has said, if you have knowledge, then you should act on it, and you haven't done. It does concern me that you haven't reported those instances of bullying that you say you are aware of. And I have to wonder why you haven't. And I think when you sum up, maybe you could explain to us why you haven't.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Chairman. We have an existing protocol. We have the union. We have our members here. For people who are worried about bullying or have been bullied or have witnessed bullied, to approach. We've heard from members that this hasn't happened. What is proposed and what the amendment does is demean the existing protocol, it demeans the staff, the union, the members and the member champion. We were asked to explain why we will not be supporting this. I think I just have. Thank you.
Councillor Ives.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fact is that employees who believe they have been subject to bullying or harassment have the right to take forward a claim to an employment tribunal. To date, nothing has been taken before a court of law. I believe in natural justice and I believe in due process. We should not be undermining that due process. We should not be acting on hearsay. We should be acting on evidence. And if evidence is held by any individual, it must be brought forward and taken through the proper process. If we start saying, right, there should be an inquiry into this just because of hearsay, it means that anyone could launch an inquiry into anything just by launching rumour. There is a process to be followed. And I urge anyone who feels they have been subject to bullying to follow that due process, and it will be taken very seriously in terms of the council's internal procedure, and we know that it will also be taken extremely seriously and completely independently before a tribunal. I just think that we are playing politics with what is a very sensitive issue, and we are looking to undermine those policies and procedures which are actually there to safeguard employees and the welfare of our work staff. Thank you.
Councillor Frank.
Well, I think Councillor Cowling and Councillor Ives have just really covered what I was going to say. There is no evidence at all of bullying within this council. There's no sound evidence. It's all rhetoric and conjecture. And it's fuelled by rumours. Fuelled by rumour. There's no sound evidence. If there was sound evidence, yes, it is a serious issue, a very serious issue. Bullying is a very serious issue. And there is, within this council, if you witness bullying or if you're told of bullying, there is a procedure in place which looks just very well pointed out. But there is no evidence of any bullying within this council. None whatsoever. This is all smoke and feathers. It's ridiculous.
Final one, Councillor Oxley.
First things first. There's nobody more against bullying in any organisation than me, I can assure you. I wasn't always a small-time B&B owner. When you've made as many people redundant, when you've closed as many factories, when you've impacted as many lives as I have in the past, you understand the impact that that has on people. So to actually hear that if I oppose this motion, I must be either complicit or condone bullying, offends me as an individual completely. Let's put this in perspective. When I signed to part of this council, I signed for some responsibilities. One of them was, if I was aware of any bullying, any members of staff that were having that sort of pressure, I had to raise the specific point of that person's case. I'm not aware of any, and it doesn't sound as though anybody else has raised specific cases. Members here are the officers, staff here, are represented by a trade union. If there'd been bullying, something would have been said by that trade union. Something would have been said to the staff champion. Something would have been said to one of us. And we would have undertaken our duty to raise it formally. None of that has happened. Final observation. Having worked for many big organisations, set somebody off looking for bullying, they'll find some. Because the rumours will run, people will want a shot. You cannot start anything like this unless there is sound evidence to base it on. My experience tells me, you start an investigation based on rumour, and you'll find that everybody plays the rumour game. So let's have some hard evidence, let's have some examples, let's get that first, and then let's take it seriously, because if it's there, I want it out as much as anybody else. But we can't do it based on rumour, and I will be voting against this, and that means that I am neither complicit in bullying, nor do I condone it. So please don't level that accusation at me personally. Thank you.
Okay. I must call it. We've had many, many comments now, and we're starting. There are some repetition, although meaning well meant. Councillor Potter, it's your amendment. Would you like to sum up for your amendment before we go to the vote?
Yes, please. I don't want to steal Councillor Clark's thunder, because I'm sure he's going to thunder a little. I actually said to oppose the motion quite simply means that those members either condone bullying or pretend it doesn't exist. I've heard quite a few people say these are merely rumours, we're looking at fresh air, no firm evidence exists. So let's not ask employees for any evidence then. If there's no evidence, why are we raising it? Is this just for fun? No, I don't think so. Well, I'll leave that to Councillor Clark.
Councillor Potter.
Bullying is a very serious issue, as many people have said. And those being bullied will inevitably feel their jobs are threatened. And those doing the bullying are highly likely to be their managers. And in a small council like this, those are the very people they must report it to. Have we had a staff survey any time in the last however many years? That's the sort of occasion where this sort of issue can be raised, hopefully anonymously. Is protocol not followed a reason to not investigate legitimate claims? Now, I shall let Councillor Clark speak about whether these are rumours, fresh air and no firm evidence. But please don't forget the fact that these issues have been raised. So you have the choice to either vote against the motion and the amendment and thus sweeping the whole thing under the carpet, pretending it doesn't exist, or we crack on and we actually find out what this is all about. Thank you.
Okay, I feel that's been the amendment's been sufficiently debated, so I'd like to move it to the vote. Okay, Councillor Clark.
Sorry about that, Chair. Well, let's have a look at one or two of the things that have been stated. If you've got any evidence, there's a process. I had evidence, I followed the process, and nothing's happened. I must apologise to Councillor Arnold for my paper rustling while he is praying, but I hadn't seen prayers on the council agenda, so I must have been having religion inflicted on me at the beginning of a meeting that I've come to take part in. But if my paper rustling upsets you, Steve, I apologise most profusely. Councillor Wainwright says that chasing shadows, no firm evidence. Absolutely right. That's what this is asking for, to look to see what the evidence is. Because the evidence that I have brought in, and you don't want it here tonight, I can list six cases, evidence to go with those cases, but no, we don't want them because we can't for various exempt reasons, etc. and so on. Okay, fine, we can't. So, what route is there for doing it? Get somebody to look into it and take the evidence. Paul Andrews says, what have we done about it? Dr. Thornton, work survey, absolutely right. Councillor Shields set up a group of people to do it, but she will be voting against it tonight. But there is no evidence that there isn't bullying. But there is a swale of bits and pieces flying around, which is why I raised it 9 months ago in this council chamber, and nothing has happened. I don't know how many times the harassment policy has been instigated, or how many people have been charged under it, or how many people have been found, but we need to know. Councillor Cowling, bullying in the council, trying to destroy the council. Well, if trying to destroy the council is suggesting to her last year that we ought to look into bullying, and it been ignored for 9 months throughout this year, if that's me trying to destroy the council, I don't know, because I'm asking for it to be looked into, and if there's evidence found, that to be acted upon, and if there's nothing found, then that's that cleared out of the way. But she is absolutely right. I am not going to drop it, because if I take followed both those two routes with that evidence that I've got and nothing has happened, then I will continue. Councillor Frank said, I do like the phrase, smoke and feathers. Yeah, I like that. If there's no evidence, she said.
3 minutes, Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. If there's no evidence, then fine. But what if there is evidence? And we need that to be looked into. I think that sums it up, Chair. Amendment is welcomed by the mover and seconder of the motion, and we would like a recorded vote on it, please, Chair, if my colleagues will.
Thank you. Can we now take this to the vote, then, please? We're voting on the amendment. So it's those in favour of it's the amendment that we're voting on, as proposed by Councillor Potter.
That's 6 votes for, 20 votes against, no abstentions.
Thank you. So the amendment is defeated. Need to go back to the original motion. Sorry, Councillor Andrews?
Yes, Chairman. To speak on the original motion, the request is for the Chief Executive to look into this. The suggestion has been, as the unions appear to have done nothing, then nothing needs to be done. The unions, Chairman, have no contact with members, no direct contact with members, because we have no personnel committee, no joint works committee, and therefore they are pretty well powerless. And similarly, any member of staff who wishes to put in an official complaint and go through the official procedures, if they end up by being deemed to be persona non grata to the establishment, they will get nowhere. And I really do think that in the circumstances, the Chief Executive at least should be prepared to conduct an internal investigation along the lines which is stated in the original motion. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, Councillor Arnold, Val. Did you want to say anything?
Not now, Chairman, thank you.
Okay. This is on the original motion. Anybody else want to say anything on the original motion? Councillor Franks.
I think we should just wind back just a few minutes in this chamber and listen to what Councillor Farnell said. She's the member champion. She's the champion of the staff here, and she's had no objection to nothing at all about bullying. She's had no complaints about bullying. She's not had to deal with anything about bullying. Now, surely, if there is any bullying within this organisation, surely our champion would have heard about it and would have put the procedure in place and dealt with it.
Councillor Farnell.
Thank you. I'd just like to come back at Councillor Paul Andrews to say that the Unison Regional Representative does contact me as and when necessary and is currently in discussions with myself and Unison reps of staff with regards to the T2020 consultation.
Councillor Cowling.
Just very briefly to say that members aren't in contact with any of the unions is absolutely ridiculous. I've been talking to a union member today and he actually said to me that he was totally unaware of any incidents of bullying. He'd only seen one incident of bullying in this council and it was by a member.
Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Clark, do you want to sum up?
Thank you, Chair. Well, where do we go from here then? We've got a clear mandate to not do anything. We have got instructions from the Chief Executive that if you have a question of bullying, you should take it to her. That doesn't work. You have a proposal here to have it done outside of the council. We don't want that. What do you think it's like when people are bullied? They leave. They go off sick. They get a job that hasn't got the pressures and the bullying and the tension. Now, I don't know whether that is for people in this council or whether it's 14. But I do know it's some. And I object strongly to being accused of spreading rumours when, as soon as I try to put facts onto the table, everybody goes, oh no, it's personal. Yes, it is. But bullying is personal. There's no other sort of bullying. So if somebody is bullied and they write into this authority, or they get a representative to write into this authority, so the person is bullied, they're driven out, their representative writes in and says, we believe they were bullied, can you please look into it? They get a reply to say they can't be looked into. Fine. Nothing wrong with that. They've done everything right, and this council can't look into it. Now, if that's acceptable to all of you, that's absolutely fine. This council can't look into bullying. If, on the other hand, this council does want to look into if there has been bullying, and does want to look at the members of the public and ex-employees and present employees, etc., and it turns out to be two cases, and one was a clash of personalities and one was something else, and it's not serious, fine. On the other hand, if it is serious and there are things that have gone wrong and going wrong, why are we not wanting to try and sort it out? What is the problem with that? Or are we waiting for something even more serious to happen before we say, I wonder if that's bullying? And if it is, I wonder if that's a bullying, we should be looking into it now. And Councillor Frank, if she listens back to the tape of what she said...
Can you sum up, please?
Yes, if she listens back to the tape of what she said, is absolutely right. If there is evidence, yes, we will act. If there isn't, we won't. We don't know yet. Thank you, Chair. And could we have a recorded vote on this as well, Chair?
Yes.
Six votes for, 19 votes against, 2 abstentions.
Okay, the motion is lost. So now, at this late hour, we shall go on to the leader's statement.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, good night, Luke. I'll say that I hope you've all had a good summer, but I think I need to exclude some of you from that. And have been able to take in some of our local agricultural shows. We have a very diverse range of shows, which all provide a magnificent showcase for our food and farming industry. But I will have to single out the Rydale show for special mention, with apologies to Michael, because I know how much work he puts into Moulton's show. But Rydale show was fabulous, especially looking back at the history of the show and it was great to see the Duchess of Kent attend the show in its 150th year. Following on with the agricultural theme, I am pleased that the government has announced that it will continue to pay farm and other subsidies currently received from Brussels after Britain leaves the European Union until 2020. There is a £40 million fund to help tourism being announced, which is also very welcome and recognises the importance of tourism to our economy. Tourism was worth in excess of £22 billion to the country last year. The Treasury has also promised it will fully fund structural and investment funds, which are significant to our LEP area and our growth plans, which we have agreed in the Rydale Economic Action Plan. This should be good news for the extension of the Thornton Road industrial estate, which I understand gained planning permission last night, which is another step towards making it an oven-ready scheme. And it has been prioritised for progression through the application for local growth deal funding. We have quite a sizeable agenda tonight, and it is now 9:20. But for my last topic, I am going to talk about Rydale District Council. For more than 25 years now, I've watched Rydale develop into the successful and efficient organisation it now is. It never ceases to amaze me that every 4 years we have new members who are prepared to put their heads above the parapet and give of their time to help make Rydale a better place to live. Perhaps if they attended a few of our full council meetings, they would think twice. But more than that, I am immensely proud of the staff of Rydale District Council, who continue to rise to the challenge of continuous change in order to deliver frontline services to the residents of Rydale. Their dedication and versatility is unbelievable. We are a very small organisation, and many of us have known each other for many years. It makes me very sad to see members of this council accusing staff and members of condoning bullying, abuse of powers of delegation, and breaking the council's constitution. Because of the controls we have in place, it would be almost impossible for this to happen without the knowledge of a considerable number of staff and members. So it follows that Councillor Clark is accusing many of us. I've already said some of this, but that member, if he really has knowledge of such incidents, is fully aware of the procedures to follow. I would say that he not only has a moral duty, but a legal duty to report such incidents. So, Councillor Clark, bring your evidence forward. I am absolutely confident that there is no culture of bullying in Rydale District Council. The only bullying I see is that by a certain members towards officers of this council, officers who have no right of reply. You've all witnessed it tonight. Absolutely unacceptable behaviour. Bullying by a failed anarchist who has timed his allegations to perfection in a calculated move to try and inflict harm when our organisation is at a vulnerable stage in its development. Both members and staff alike are feeling the strain of change. It is fairly obvious that Councillor Clark is trying to damage this council and is prepared to go to any lengths to do so. Quite why he wants to do that, I haven't worked out yet. But the rest of the members and the staff need to stand united and join me in condemning his actions. Thank you.
Any questions to Councillor Cowling? Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. Is this addendum to your statement going to be in the minutes, in the additional bit to the minutes, or are we going to get a copy of it or not? Because if we're going to make accusations, it would be nice to see what's written down. If not, don't worry about it, but it would be nice through you, Chair, if we knew whether we were going to have a copy of this or not.
Councillor Carling, do you want to answer that?
You'll have to ask the committee clerk.
It will be in the minutes. It will be in the minutes.
It's recorded.
It's recorded. More? Moving on to agenda item 11, to consider for approval the recommendations with respect to following Part B committee items, starting off with Minute 5, Rydale Community Infrastructure levy Payment Instalment Policy, page 23. Councillor Windress.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll just move the Office of Recommendation.
Is that seconded? Yes. Councillor Oxley.
I've been seconded.
Councillor Windress, do you want to move your speech?
Thank you, Chairman. The recommendation was unanimously agreed by the Planning Committee on the 7th of June this year. The key elements are set out in paragraph 6.5 of the Planning Committee report, page 27 of this agenda. This proposes four payment categories to enable still to be paid in smaller amounts and over a slightly longer time period. This is likely to assist smaller developers, but also this can sometimes be an issue for larger developers too. This is the proposed approach. It will, however, be monitored, and if the policy requires further amendment, this will be the subject of another report to members. Thank you, Chairman.
Would anybody like to speak on that? Councillor Clark.
Chair, we're not going to have questions on this. No? Well, I thought we would normally do a Part B item, but if we're not going to tonight, it's not a problem. I can make a speech and ask all the questions, and the Chair of Planning can remember them all and come back in his response to them all. But if he would prefer, and I might prefer, and others might prefer them to go in one by one, that might be a little easier for everybody, but whichever Chair you wish.
Councillor Windress, which way would you like that one?
Which way would you like it?
Do you want questions?
Yeah, question by question. Yeah. What happens if the developer goes bankrupt during the repayment period?
We don't get no sale. Because he won't have built the houses probably anyway. He won't have built all the houses or sold them. Sorry? He won't have. The sale is due at the start. The first repayment is due at the start when they start the development. So if they go bust at the start, there will be no SIL payment, but they won't build anything anyway.
Supplementary, Chair, are we saying then that the SIL payments will all be paid before the buildings are finished? Because I didn't understand it that way. I mean, Councillor Windress knows a lot more about this than I do, but I thought that you could have a building finished, completed and done and still have the payment of SIL coming through. Are we saying that doesn't work like that? Because I'd be delighted if it doesn't.
If you read the report, it does tell you in there.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Councillor Cowling, thank you through you to the Councillor Cowling. It is nice to be told and have it confirmed that I've missed something. That's the second time I've agreed with you this year. Why does the Council not have a charge on the property? What happens in terms of them going bankrupt or whatever else? Others will have claims on the residue. Do we have?
I don't know the answer to that one. I will get a written answer for you.
Thank you very much, and we can find that it makes sense or doesn't in the non-minute part of this, but we'll have a think about that in the future. Why should the public be behind the landowner, who will have got their money for this, the building supplies merchant that would have been paid for what they've got up to that point, and the developer, where does, you know, if the developer just about survives and there's no money left, why is the public at the end of that trail? Or am I misunderstanding something? And if I am, can you please explain?
The public aren't at the end of the trail. It will be paid on the bigger development in 4 instalments. At the start, the first one, when they start the development, they pay the first one, and I believe if I can find the right page on here, 27. I'll be right with you. Under the SIL liability, if it's a development under £10,000, if the SIL is under £10,000, the amount is due in full within 6 calendar months of commencement. From £10,000 to £50,000 of SIL due in 2 equal instalments within 6 months of commencement, it's all there in the report.
I think, Chair. Pardon? I think, Chair, that we've missed something there between us, because your answer I fully understand. I'm not sure that you understood the question. Why does the policy appear to benefit larger developers? In other words, why do we not have the same spread of payments across any size of development?
Possibly because if you're building about 300 houses, it's going to take you a lot longer to build them. And, of course, you've more to sell to pay off the amount of money that we're requiring. I mean, in some cases, some of them, the SIL will be up to almost £1 million for the bigger developments. So, therefore, you give them more time to sell houses to pay the SIL.
This is my final supplementary, Chair.
Okay.
That's it. If, on that logic, you have got a SIL which is in proportion on one house at the bottom end of the scale, and you haven't got it finished yet, on what basis is that not an even bigger crisis to you? Because if you've got £1 million of SIL, you'd hope you'd finished some to get some money coming in. If you're a small builder, you have got, I don't mean small, 5'2", but you're building 2 houses or 3 houses and you haven't got one finished or sold yet, you're in a worse position than where one's got 300 being built and they've only completed 50.
Well, if you've only got 3 houses and it's under £10,000, you won't be paying anyway.
Okay. A question, Councillor Potter.
Yeah, I was under the impression that the SIL was all about paying for the necessary infrastructure, the sort of things that the public end up having to pay for. So, isn't effective town planning about provision of all the necessary infrastructure rather than just bending over backwards for large market housing developments and giving them best part of a couple of years to pay up? So why is the funding being held back when really the infrastructure should be in place or at least planned before any major development, not 2 years later?
Well, the developer have to do so much of the infrastructure anyway, as in new roads, roundabouts, whatever, that are part of the conditions of the planning. The rest of the money will be taken as SIL by this council, and as far as I understand it, the people who want that money for the other infrastructure have to apply to this council for that money.
Right, any more questions? Could be then Councillor Windrest, you have opened. So anybody want to speak in the debate? In that case, I'd like to move to the vote. Please, can you vote on this?
It's 21 votes for, no votes against, and 3 abstentions.
Okay, that motion is carried, so we'll move on to minute 41, Slingsby, Southholme and Frighton Design Statement, page 29. With Councillor Windrest, briefly introduce this recommendation.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll move the officer recommendation. Seconder.
I'll second that.
Any questions for Councillor Windrest? No. Councillor Windrest, would you move it, please?
Yeah, I'll just, once again, this is an excellent statement, and just move the officer report, or move the recommendation.
Councillor Wainwright.
Chairman, I hope the members have all had the chance. Well, they have had the chance. I hope they've all read the document. It's a very impressive document, very well put together by some excellent people. The whole of the community of Slingsby have had the input, and I'm sure that this document will help when they're doing their parish plan rerun to give Slingsby the important village within our community that it needs to be. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Arnold.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd just like to endorse what Councillor Wainwright has said. It's an excellent plan for the three villages, Slingsby, Southholme and Frighton Village. There's a lot of people put a lot of hard work into this, and they've included the whole of the community, and I commend them on this report. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to speak? Okay, then I would like to members to cast their votes.
That's carried unanimously.
Okay, the motion is carried, so we move on to minute 22, counter fraud policy and anti-money laundering policy, page 91. Would Councillor Aikam please brief? Introduce this recommendation.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say that I recommend this report to the Council and ask for their approval.
Any seconder?
I'll second that, Chairman.
Any questions? Okay, Councillor Aikam, would you like to speak?
No, I have nothing to add to that. It's a case of keeping up to date with the necessary legislation and making sure that we have a cover for fraud and anti-money laundering.
Okay. Anybody else wish to say anything on this? Okay, I think we can go to the vote. Please cast your vote.
That's carried unanimously.
Okay, thank you. The motion is carried. So we're moving on to Treasury Management Annual Report. Can the Finance Manager please brief members on this report?
Thanks, Chairman. I'll keep it brief. This is one of three reports that we're required to bring to full council, and this one is the outturn report for last financial year 15-16. The contents of the report were presented to the last meeting of the Audit Committee for scrutiny. The report covers the two main treasury management functions, investments and borrowing. And in terms of investments, well, we're all aware that rates have remained depressed throughout the year. However, we did achieve an investment return of 98,000 against an initial estimate of 59,000. And members will recall that investment interest is used to fund the capital programme, so that's a bonus to the capital programme. I can also confirm that all investment activities were carried out within the limits set in the Treasury Management Strategy, which was approved in February 2015. In terms of borrowing, gross borrowing remained at 1.75 million during the year. The Council has a remaining borrowing requirement of 320,000 to fund the current four-year capital programme. The timing of borrowing for the remaining balance will take into account the level of other capital funds available and prevailing borrowing rates. And when that is undertaken, obviously we'll report that to members. Members are also asked to note the report and approve the annual prudential and treasury indicators, which are contained within Appendix B on the report on page 141 of the agenda. Have I taken any questions?
No questions? No. Councillor Keel, would you move the recommendation?
The recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
Seconder?
Yes, I'll second that.
Councillor Aiken. Does anyone wish to speak in favour? Anybody want to speak at all? Okay. Let's go to the debate, to the vote then.
That's carried unanimously.
Okay, that's carried. So now we move on to agenda item 14. Please, could someone move exempt? And is that seconded? Does anyone wish to speak on that subject? I'll put it to the vote then.
That's carried unanimously.
Okay, the motion is carried, so...